Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
A binge-worthy show about Jesus? The Chosen Season 3 is here. Come and see what the buzz is about. The Chosen explores the imperfect and messy relationships of real humans following Jesus. The first 6 episodes are available now. Stream each new episode for free. Plus, watch exclusive content like The After Show. Only in the new Chosen app. Download the Chosen app on mobile and TV streaming devices. Visit BingeJesus.com to learn more.
Montgomery County, Maryland is where businesses go to be next. Home to a highly skilled, diverse workforce, a thriving business community, competitive incentives, and more. MoCo will help transform your business. Visit BeNext.ThinkMoCo.com to see how we can help you be next.
Welcome to the Fantrax Toolshed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From dynasty to prospects to redraft, we got you covered. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clay.
All right, fantasy baseball fanatics around the world, welcome to the Toolshed. This is episode 115 of the Fantrax Toolshed with Clayton Cross, powered by Fantrax and FantraxHQ.com. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have another fun episode in store today, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, what's going on, man?
Not much. He's back at the ballpark today, which was good. Called an afternoon game, so that was a good time. Been over a week since we got a live look, but we're back today, so that's fun. Ready to talk some baseball. We're talking some redraft kind of stuff today. Even some dynasty relevance too with some of these guys we're going to talk about. So I think it's going to be a good show that I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, there's always some dynasty spin every episode. Like this one's usually a little more redraft than the Monday episode, but yeah, we always have a nice mix of everything. We always do. Yeah, it's been a bit after getting the 4 out of the 6 games in the series the previous week. Portland was on the road. They are back Didn't go to the game yesterday, meaning Tuesday, because I already seen Brendan Walter twice this year. And luckily today was very rainy, drizzly all day, rained pretty hard off and on. So today's game was actually postponed, which actually works out well for me because I wanted to get another look at Breon Bello, who was supposed to go Thursday, which would have been hard for me to get to. I would have done it, but it would have been a pain. So now he probably just goes Friday night, which is much easier. I can bring my kids. Don't have to worry about school the next day for them, getting them home for bedtime. So get some more live looks at Bello, and I'll probably get another live look at Jake Groom, who only lasted one third of an inning last time. He was out of the game in about 5 minutes after several hits and walks. But yeah, it'll be good to get back to the ballpark after a week off. But we have a really fun episode today, a lot of stuff to get to, so let's get right into it. But before we do, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04, and our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review. Check out our Patreon for extra content from both of us and our YouTube channel for plenty of live prospect video throughout the season. And, of course, check out all the other great work we have going on at Fantrax HQ with multiple fantasy baseball articles coming out every single day. All right. Let's get right into it here. So a common theme lately that we didn't plan on, but just kind of happened that way. We started out the last, I think, two episodes by asking if a certain young rising pitcher can be considered a fantasy ace. So we did, was it Shane McClanahan? And then who did we do last week? Manoah, right?
Yep.
Okay. McClanahan, then Manoah. So we'll keep that trend going today. Go to the guy that looks like WB Mason, Dylan Cease, who is off to a very good start. He had a dominant start, outing the other day. Five starts total, 2.48 ERA, 0.93 WHIP, 33.9% K rate, which is up 2% from last year, 8.7% walk rate, which is down almost 1% from last year. Only given up one barrel, still has the huge, huge whiff rates, even though it's actually gone down a bit, but still has three offerings above a 33% whiff rate, all four of his offerings above a 27% whiff rate. So far, so good for Dylan Cease, but can he be considered a fantasy ace? I know he could look like it more often than not, but he always seems to have those blow-up outings and the walk rate, though it's better, so it could get him into trouble. So, Chris, would you, if he was your ace, both redraft and dynasty, would you feel comfortable with that?
Yeah, I certainly would. He's looked like it. He's my ace in the Highlander Dynasty Invitational. So him and Musgrove anchoring it down. Like, I don't have a true. I never drafted a true ace, but shoot, I'm more than happy with what I've gotten from Cease so far. Like, I would say, especially in a 20 team league, like he's an ace.
Yeah, I think so too. And even in 15 teamers, I think he settles in. I don't think he's top 10. I want to see more consistency from him to be top 10, but 12 to 15 range, I think, is fair, kind of in the same range as Logan Webb. I think I'd put Giolito in that range now. McClanahan probably, though. I like McClanahan a little bit more. What do you like more, Griff? Do you like McClanahan more long-term, or do you like Dylan Cease? For me, I go McClanahan, but it's close.
Yeah, it's pretty close. I do believe in the strides that we've seen Cease make this year, so I'd lean him by a hair, but I think it's really close from both of them.
Yeah, no, for sure. And McClanahan's my ace. I always has him now in Highlander Dynasty Invitational. I also have Joe Ryan, who we'll talk about here in a little bit, and then I'm waiting on Jack Flaherty and Tyler Glasnow as well. So that is a staff I really like. Nice young staff, and we'll talk Joe Ryan here in a few minutes. But yeah, Dylan Cease, I think I would. Yeah, I think I would be okay with him as my ace. I would love him as my two if I can get, you know, one of the top guys, like a Walker Buehler or, you know, someone like that, Julio Urias, or someone like that early on, and then come back with Cease as my two, basically have two aces on my squad. That would be absolutely incredible. But yeah, he's definitely, you know, even though the whiff rate is down a little bit, the chase rate is up almost 6% from last year. Zone contact still in the 73% range. So he's throwing more first pitch strikes this year, but you know, not by much, but you know, some improvements here. And once he gets that whiff rate back up, I think that K rate will go even higher. It's kind of awesome that the K rate's already gone up by 2%, even though the whiff rates are down overall. So love to see it from Mr. Dylan Cease. A lot of red on the Savant page. Outside of the walker rate, everything else is in red. So love to see that. And now moving over to Mr. Joe Ryan, who's off to a maybe even more spectacular start. Doesn't have quite the same K rate as Mr. Dylan Cease, but
through five starts, a 1.63 ERA, 0.83 WHIP, 6.6% walk rate, and a 26.4% strikeout rate. Where are you at on Joe Ryan long-term, Chris? Because obviously Ryan, he was never the flashiest prospect, but he always produced every level. He always, I think he's one of those guys that continues to exceed expectations. So he doesn't have like that one pitch with like a 50% whiff rate. His slider's pushing 40% right now. It was at 35.3 last year, 39.7 this year. Four seamer at 28.2, and then the curveball and changeup both below 20% whiff rate right now. But he limits hard contact well. He commands his pitches well, mixes them well. I think he could be, I don't know, his top 40 starter fair long term.
Yeah, I mean, he just gets the job done, you know, differently than really any other pitcher. And you watch him, and he's not super flashy, but what you get with Joe Ryan is his fastball is so good because of his vertical approach angle. And I know that's kind of a foreign term for some people, but basically the flatter your vertical approach angle is on a four seamer, the more effective it's going to be up in the zone. And that's what he does. It's a super flat vertical approach angle, and he peppers the top of the zone so well with it, which really helps him out significantly because his fastball is, I mean, he doesn't have a ton of velo on it, but it plays up so much because of that, that it makes him such an effective arm. And, you know, his fastball is really good because of those things. So here's, I was looking a little bit more into it and basically looking at release height. So this Chris Langan tweeted this, said, never conclude how fastball projects to play without first contextualizing release height. And it says pitchers with an average vertical break of 14 to 16 inches and a release height below 5 foot or 5.75 foot have historically gotten better results than their higher slot peers. And that's Joe Ryan. He fits that really well. So basically he's throwing the fastball from a lower arm slot and the approach angle is flatter and it really throws off hitter. So it performs really well up in the zone. It's basically the Walker Buehler path. Like Buehler's a very similar comp from like a fastball standpoint, like from that flat vertical approach angle. So for Ryan, it plays up extremely well. And I think that he can continue the success. I don't know to what extent, but also I think that it is sustainable, like what he's doing, because he's always done it. Like people always question him as a prospect, but he just continually got the job done because of what he did, because of who he is. And I think he's going to be a really solid arm moving forward. Maybe like, I'm trying to think of a good comp for him, but like he's definitely like an SP2 long-term, I think. Just not a flashy one.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I wasn't sure if I wanted to go SP2, but definitely at least SP3 territory, especially in your 15 teamers, because yeah, like you said, he just continues to get the job done. And that's what counts. You know, we've seen flashy arms just completely flail out. So Ryan, that, like I said, a fastball, look at the heat map on the fastball. It's, yeah, right in the upper part of the zone very well. Slider could be committed a little bit better, but overall, like, you know, even though he won't be a huge K rate guy, he still has a whiff rate above 30% on the season at 30.4%. Chase rate above 30% as well. Zone contact rate is above league average. And a lot of that is to do with the fastball, which he has 13 of his 28 strikeouts on last year. He had 17 of his 30 strikeouts on the four-seamer. He's decreased the usage a little bit up the slider usage. There's about 13%, give or take, either way with those. Four-seamer down 13.5%, slider up 13.5%, curve and changer, but, you know, about combined 18, 19% in that range. So he's going to that slider a bit more. It's doing well, 194 batting average against. Four-seamer's 111 batting average against, and both have a slug allowed around 250 and a WOBA around 230. So those two pitches, getting the job done. He uses them a little over 80% of the time. I definitely like what I'm seeing so far from Ryan. He's one of those guys that's always been underrated. Like, we talk about this with some of the hitters as well, guys like, you know, Bryson Staal, Alec Thomas. Just because the guys aren't flashy doesn't mean they can't have, you know, long-term success, obviously. And these are guys that are great targets because that price tag in Dynasty especially is always to be a little bit lower than it probably should be. So yeah, Joe Ryan, definitely a good target. I wouldn't even sell high unless you can get like a really good return on him right now. I might consider that, obviously, but it's not, I'm not saying like, I think we both are like, yeah, he can, you know, he can maintain a high level of success. So I would hold, unless you get a great offer, I would hold Joe Ryan and see where this goes. Maybe he could be one of your, the horses in your rotation here for years to come. Moving to our next player here. Let's go. We have some bullpen guys on the list today. Ryan Helsley and Michael King have been incredibly impressive so far this year. Helsley was one that had a lot of big fab bids this past week after he got that, I think it was a 2-inning save the other day on, I think it was, what, Friday or Saturday he had
must
that.
Have been Saturday.
I think it was Saturday with fab running Sunday night. That was his only save so far this year. And Giovanni Gallegos has been kind of shaky overall this season, but Helsley is not. So we'll start there with him, get to Michael King here in a second. In 8 1/3 innings over 7 appearances for Helsley, he's allowed, get this, I think it was just one hit overall, no runs, no walks, and 16 strikeouts for a nice little 0.12 whip. What's he averaging the fastball? Is it over 100? No, 99.1, close to 100. 99.1 on the fastball. He's yet to allow anything off that fastball. 7 of his 16 strikeouts on that. Also has a little slider cutter hybrid at 88.3, which is a very good pitch as well. 54.8% whiff rate, 40% on that four-seamer. So obviously, you know, for dynasty purposes, we don't usually target these relievers too often, at least not heavily, but more so for redraft, Chris, do you think there's some appeal to Helsley this year, or do you think it's still Gallegos in that role?
No, I mean, Gallegos got the save the next day after everybody went crazy with the fab. So I don't think this is the case. I think this is a case where Gallegos didn't pitch for a week, and I'm not exactly sure why. There may have been a reason out there, but if so, I don't know. But this is a case where he was hot after an inning, they left him in for a second, and he got the save, and everybody went bonkers about it. But I just really don't believe that it's going to stick. Like, Gallegos has 5 saves this year. I think that continues. Helsley probably sneaks in a couple, but I don't think personally he's worth all the fab that everybody went crazy for.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. I was shocked to see him go for that much fab. Like, obviously people go crazy in fab over relievers because usually 2/3 of your league is hurting for saves. That's how it is every year, but see him go for that much after 1-2 out save. Like, that's nothing against Helsley. Helsley has been absolutely dominant, and the success is there. It shows in the numbers. But for this year, if you're in a saves holds league, sure, okay, I get it. But I just added him in a saves hold league that I'm in. But I just, if you're just strictly just saves, you know, your standard 5x5, I don't see it. You know, if you're in a deeper league and need some help with, you know, ratios and Ks, sure. But if you're looking for saves, I don't see it this year. But do you think he could be? Do you think he's ever in that closer role? I know it's kind of always hard to predict the future, especially with bullpens and how they seem to go these days. But do you think there's a chance that he does get a closer role at some point, whether it's in St. Louis or elsewhere, and can develop into that top flight relief pitcher for fantasy purposes?
He's got the stuff for it. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, who knows? Changes so dramatically, and that's the hard thing. Like, in dynasty leagues about paying up for a closer, like, you know, it's a significant challenge to figure out like who's worth it, who's long-term sustainability. I don't know. I mean, personally, like, I know Gallegos hasn't been great, but his ERA has been so ballooned by that Nolan Arenado throw that was an error, and he ended up getting 4 earned runs tacked on because of that one. It should have been all, you know, unearned runs. So I don't know. I'm still believing that Gallegos is the guy. Gallegos is around as St. Louis as long as Helsley's got one more year past Gallegos as far as team control. But it just evolves, and the closer carousel changes so quickly. But I think he's certainly got the stuff to be a closer. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. How about Michael King, though? Who would you rather have long-term in Dynasty League, Michael King or Ryan Helsley?
Gosh, I don't know. I hate relievers for Dynasty. Like, I know you have to have them, but
how about this year then? Let's go this year. Yeah. For me personally, I'd go Michael King just because, well, first off, in most leagues, he'll have that nice little starting pitcher and relief pitcher eligibility, which is always nice for flexibility, especially like if you're over on Yahoo leagues that, you know, like usually Fantrax and NFBC users have 9 pitcher slots, though you can change them, obviously. But King pitches more innings. Simply as that, you know, he's 8.1 innings for Helsey. King, I think, is double that. I think he's around 16 or 17. Yeah, 16.2, exactly double that. And almost as good, 0.54 ERA, 0.78 whip, 40.7% K rate, high whiff rate on all of his pitches, 31% or higher with 3 above 40%. I'd rather go Michael King for this year just because he's given you, and I have him a couple redraft teams where it's like, all right, like 2 innings here, 2 innings there, and end of the year, I think he's on pace for like 115, 120 innings, something like that. If you can get 160 Ks out of that, great ratios. He'll probably vulture 8-9 wins. He already has 2 this year, and that's hard to predict, but he's in that role where he will probably get at least a handful more wins, sneak some saves in there as well, maybe like 8 wins, 5 saves, something like that with good ratios and a lot of strikeouts. He could be like a top 40 pitcher this year if he does all that.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think that's really the factor. It's like the Spencer Strider thing where Strider's really valuable because – he comes in these 3-inning stints, and while Strider may get a spot in the rotation soon, I don't know. The Braves' 5th spot's been brutal. But if you get multiple 3-inning stints a week and elite ratios and strikeouts, like you're looking at like one start from an ace. Like if you get 6 innings and you get like 8 to 10 strikeouts, then you're doing something big. And that's the nice thing. I mean, I know King's only thrown 3 innings once, but he's had multiple 2-plus inning outings, and they've all been really good. So I think that definitely factors in. And like when you combine these multi-inning outings, it's like having, like I said, one good starter and even like an ace at that. So while you won't build the innings of a starter long term, I do think that King is definitely worth the ad.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And 110, 120 innings is kind of the equivalent of what 150 used to be about 5-6 years ago with how pitchers go these days. But yeah, I definitely, King, I hate how good that Yankees bullpen is. Even Chapman, who's velocity's down, the walk rate's up, which we kind of all thought was going to happen anyway. He hasn't given up a run yet, and he's got 5 or 6 saves. So the Yankees bullpen has been pretty damn good, and Michael King might be the best one in that pen right now. Let's get away from relievers here. Well, kind of. This next guy on the list started the year as a reliever, kind of in that same role as Michael King, multi-inning weapon out of the pen, but he's moved into the rotation. Over the last, he's now made 3 starts. He made a start today. Part of that was because Tanner Houck could not go up to Toronto, but it looks like Garrett Whitlock might stay in the rotation now. So after his 3rd start today, he's now up to 17 2/3 innings, 0.51 ERA, 0.74 whip. He looked really good today at a 45% whiff rate and a 47% whiff rate, 35% CSW, excuse me. And that was with the slider not getting a single whiff, which coming into the start, it had a 62.5% whiff rate. He was getting whiffs on the changeup, the four-seamer, and the sinker, which is great to see. That slider's always been pretty good, so I'm not worried about that, just one outing. But struck out 9/5, Whitlock needs to be in this rotation. And if he does, and if he is rest of the season, we could be looking at a top 25 starter. I think he's got that much potential. I watch him every day. He's got top 20. I won't go much higher than that, but if he's in rotation, top 25 arm, go out and get him. He's not available in any league, but if you can trade for him, maybe, trade a Jose Barrios and get Whitlock in another piece, something like that. I would definitely look to do that because Whitlock is for real.
I think so. My biggest concern this year is the innings, like how much do you get out of him?
Right.
But the innings that you do get are going to be so good that, I'm not sure it matters. Definitely encouraging 5 innings today through 78 pitches. So, if you get 5 innings out of him every start, then I think you'll be happy with the results. It's certainly interesting and encouraging at the same time to see him really build this up. So, he's coming on strong. This start was definitely a big one for him against a good lineup at that. I mean, you look, everybody kind of laughs at the Angels, but this is a lineup that had Marsh, Trout, Otani, Anthony Rendon, like Jared Walsh. Like, this is a good lineup. So he was absolutely dominant, even 2 earned runs, like not a big deal at all. Still a great start from Garrett Whitlock.
Absolutely. And even like, you know, at this point, you could probably get, you know, 23, 24, 25 more starts in by the end of the year. If he averages about 5 innings per start, that's another right around 120 innings. So I can see him getting up in that 135, 140 innings pitch range with good ratios and a good strikeout rate, which he's at right now. Where's his K rate at right now? 31.3%. So, yeah, that would be maybe top 20 start of this year. We saw, you know, Freddy Peralta flourish as a near top 10 arm last year with not many more innings. I think he had like 145 or so innings. So, yeah, love Whitlock. He is for real. And just a big thank you to the Yankees for gifting him to us in that Rule 5 draft and not protecting him a couple years back. That was awesome. Appreciate you guys. All right. Speaking of, actually, not the Angels. We're going over to Philadelphia Phillies. Terrible segue there by me. Alec Bohm, the one hitter we have in this news and notes segment. He, another guy, that's just, he's not flashy at all, but he has really turned the corner this year, after a pretty underwhelming showing last year. And so in 115 games last year, 247, 305, 342 slash line, only 7 home runs in those 115 games after a pretty impressive rookie season, which had his stock firmly on the rise. And then after this year was trending down pretty hard, started the season off kind of slow, but overall now he's heated up lately, 317, 375, 467 slash. Only 2 home runs and 72 plate appearances, but out of the steal, he has 6 steals over his first 669 plate appearances, which is very surprising. I don't think we get any speed out of him, but it's not really the surface stats that are the impressive metrics, even though those are pretty solid. Everything has improved. And I put this tweet out there the other day, like all the contact rates, the K rate, the walk rate, the quality of contact, they've all gone up. He's at 9.6% barrel rate, 53.8% hard hit rate, a 93.5 average exit velo, 110.8 max exit velo. K rate's down 11%, walk rate up 2.5%. Are we buying back in on Mr. Alec Bohm here, Chris? I think I am. I had this conversation the other day with a few different people. It actually turned into a pretty big thread after Mr. Michael Simeone tagged our other buddy Mike Kirlin, and then it just ballooned from there. But I think I'm buying back in. You know, I was never fully out, but, and again, he's not the flashiest, it's not huge upside, it's not like top 50 fantasy upside, but, you know, 270, 20 to 25 home runs, solid counting stats, maybe chips in a few steals, that'll play as like a starting quarter infielder long term. So I'm buying back in right now. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, he's done all the right things this year. He always hit the ball hard. He hit the ball hard last year in his struggles, but he's hit the ball on the ground far too much. But this year we've seen the sweet spot percentage go up from 33.3% to 48%, which means that ideal launch angle between 8 and 32 degrees. His average launch angle is 8.3 degrees, but the sweet spot percentage is more telling, in my opinion, at 48%. That's very encouraging to see. Bohm is stroking the ball right now. I don't see a reason it's going to decline. He's also moved up in the lineup, which has been huge, and I think he's more than capable of sticking and doing what we've seen this year. Obviously, probably not to this extent, but it's still been pretty impressive. And yeah, I'm back in on him, which is crazy. It's like a roller coaster ride, but hopefully this sticks.
Right. If he can make these improvements stick long term, just another big bat in that lineup. You know, he's not gonna hit higher than 6th or 7th for the most part this season with all the other bats they have, but could have a good amount of RBI. I think he's already got, what's he up to? Is it 14? I think I said 14 RBI. Yeah, 14 RBI so far, 12 runs scored. So he could really get to, you know, 20, 80, and 70, 75 runs this season. He's still a career 278 hitter. Like last season, kind of, I said the stock was dropped because of last season, as it should have been, but still a 278 career hitter. Just want to see that power go up. He's still hitting too many ground balls, but still, like, the ingredients are there, all the quality of contact, like we mentioned. It's definitely a good time to buy back in on Alec Bohm.
I think he's going to stick in the top. He hit second last night, and he led off tonight. If he keeps hitting.
Did he lead off tonight? I saw he hit second yesterday. I didn't see that he led off today.
I think he'll stick up there if this continues.
That would be awesome.
Yeah,
that would be,
that's huge boost for his value. Going from 7th pretty consistently up to 1 or 2, like,
yeah,
that's a huge boost.
That would be great. I totally missed the leadoff today, but, yeah, that would be huge, especially with all those bats behind him, if he can get on base even at like, you know, 350 or so, score a ton of runs in that Philadelphia lineup. And that's a good ballpark as well. Like I said, not flashy, not a stud, not a guy you'll draft like second, third, fourth round, but maybe a guy that's like an annual sixth, seventh, eighth round type of guy back in top 100. I think he's definitely got that type of upside. A couple of prospect promotions this week. We talked about MJ Melendez last week. We had two more over the last handful of days. We had Miranda getting called up to Minnesota and Juan Yepez called up to St. Louis. Both hit, you know, Miranda's season has kind of been so-so, not great down in AAA, but Yepez has been absolutely crushing the ball, especially in the power department. He's up to 9 home runs this year, 279, 323, 651 in 93 plate appearances. I mean, Miranda, again, was not great, but 242, 279, 421, 2 home runs in 104 plate appearances, but 11 doubles as well, and still had that pretty solid approach, only a 13.5% strikeout rate. And I'm still a believer what we saw last year. Is he going to be, you know, a 340 hitter every year? No, but above average hit, above average power. Yepez probably a bit more power, slightly less average. So long term, actually, they could be pretty similar. I still like Miranda more, obviously, and he's the one I would target here. So I think there's a better chance, you know, a clearer path to playing time every day for him. He can play first, second, and third, which helps. Yepez, I can see getting 3-4 starts a week between DH and like right field with Carlson platooning now. But yeah, definitely. So for me, long term, it's in short term, I give the slight edge to Miranda. But what do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I just think there's a clear path to playing time for Miranda, especially with Sano out. So that edge is there if he takes it and runs with it. You know, Yepez looked good today. He had 2 hits, but why in the world did they pinch hit for him in the 7th inning? He's 2-for-3 on the day. You're up 7-0. Like, just let him get another at bat. Like, he's in a rhythm. That really is frustrating, but no, whatever. Like, they didn't ask me. But I do think just the playing time situation is better for Miranda right now. And who knows? I mean, maybe Yepez can sneak in the lineup more often than I think, at least. But for right now, I think that Miranda's skill set is at least more conducive for batting average. And I will give the edge to Yepez for power for sure. But I think the playing time path is there for Miranda.
Yeah, like long term, I see Yepez as like a 260-ish, 20, you know, 25 to 30 home runs. Miranda, 270, 280, you know, maybe a little bit less than that, 23, 24, 25 home runs. But that'll come with, I don't know where he ends up long term. My guess would be third, but I don't know. It could be first, it could be second. Probably gets dual eligibility, you know, some combination of those three, which, so he could be like a Ryan McMahon, Luis Urias type, one guy that's 2 eligibility in the infield, solid but not great hitter, but again, solid average, solid power, maybe a little bit of speed as well, handful of steals, 3, 4, 5, something like that. So a guy that's, you know, top 150-ish draft pick every year, but Yepez, not too far off, but he's said less average, doesn't provide, you know, quite as much flexibility. He's going to be either first baseman or a corner outfielder long term. So Brando will have added value with the eligibility he has. If that was like second and third, that'd be awesome because you can add in corner and field, middle and field, etc. So yeah, definitely lean Miranda both short term and long term. If you got to go out and get one of them, I'd go out and get Miranda. Again, it looks like he's a better chance for him to stick long term. So go ahead and take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side and talk a lot of struggling players. It's a early season theme, talk breakouts, talk struggling players. We got a lot more to talk about in that regard today, so do not go anywhere. We will be right back.
Want to create a breakthrough gene therapy? Pioneer aerospace excellence? Start a global hospitality brand? Be next to do it in Montgomery County, Maryland. Visit bnext.thinkmoco.com to see how our top talent, diversity, and location will help you be the next company to change the world.
All right, welcome back. Let's get into some struggling players now. We have, how many players? We have 11 players total, 5 pitchers, and 6 hitters. Let's start with the pitchers here, and we'll start down with your Atlanta Braves, Chris, Mr. Charlie Morton, after very good season last year where he finished with a 334 ERA in 33 starts, 185 and two-thirds innings, 216 strikeouts.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Was being drafted as a SP2, a top 25 arm this year, but just has not been there through his first five starts. 6.85 ERA, 1.73 whip, and well under a strikeout per inning. K rate is down to 15.8%, walk rate up to 12.3%. You know, Chris, I'll kick it over to you here because you're the Atlanta Braves fan here, but you know, I think it has something to do with the curveball. The curveball has not looked as good. Is that what kind of you're thinking right now?
Yeah, it's weird. He looked so good opening weekend when I was there. He pitched and he looked like his normal self. And so it went downhill really quick after that. And I don't know. It's hard to really pinpoint like what exactly is going wrong. There's a lot going wrong, but it's just he's allowing more contact. He's not striking people out. He's not missing bats. He's missing his spots. I mean, swinging strike rate's at 7.3%. It was 12.3 last year, 12.1 in 2020, 12.9 in 2019. Like, just not who he is. He's also a little older. I mean, he's 38 years old, so you have to wonder, like, when does Father Time actually catch up with you? And it's possible that it could be this year, but it's certainly concerning to look and see just the decline. You're right. The curveball has just not been as effective this year as it was in the past. And that could be hurting him a little bit. He's still effectively utilizing the four seam and curve the most as he did last year. You know, both used at a very similar rate. He's lowered his sinker usage a decent bit, and you know, he's mixing in the cutter and changeup a little bit. But yeah, everything in the profile just is a little bit concerning. He does have, you know, a decently high BABIP compared to last year's strand rate is pretty low. But even with a little bit of regression, you know, you're still talking about 6.85 ERA, you know, Sierra 5.14 and a FIP of 5.36. It's still early. I'm curious what we see. I think that we're looking at a pretty pivotal start or two coming up next. Like, we really need to see something out of him.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I was trying to like pinpoint why the curveball has just been so much less effective this year. Like, look at last year. Yeah, the curveball, he used it 36.7% of the time, 127 batting average against, 187 slug, 40.1% whiff rate. This year, 38.7%, so up 2% usage rate. But a 300 batting average against, 500 slug, 370 wOBA, and only a 29.9% whiff rate. And even so, the three pitches that he uses the most, four-seamer, curveball, sinker, which account for about 87% of his pitches, all have a batting average against above 300 and a slugging allowed over 500. And looking further into the curveball, like I said, I really dug into this. We got the break is about the same. Like, the velocity is up 0.4 miles per hour, 80.6 to 81. The vertical movement is basically the same as last year. Little less horizontal movement, but inch and a half less of break this year, which, you know, sounds like negligible, but it's, you know, it's not huge, but that is a difference there. But to go from it being, I don't think that's the sole reason why, you know, inch and a half less of horizontal movement is the reason why he's gone from having one of the best curveballs in baseball to one that's getting hit 300, you know, at 300 batting average against. So I don't know. The command plays a factor. I think there's a bunch of, you know, little things factoring in here. Command hasn't been the greatest. Four seamer has been left over the heart of the plate too much. You know, curveball, same thing, kind of left up a bit too much. So you got to think he gets that curveball back, right? Like, that's always been his go-to, his bread and butter. Just to see him fall off a cliff like that with the curveball would be kind of odd. So I'm still buying, maybe not expecting what we expected before the season, like top 25 arm, but top 40, still top 50 for sure. But I think he's going to be a good number three. Would you be looking to buy in Dynasty right now, especially if you're contending?
Yeah, I think you can get him dirt cheap in Dynasty based on the age. And, you know, especially after the start, now you can look and probably get him for virtually nothing. So, yeah, I think it's a decent time to go out and get him, honestly.
Agreed. All right, moving over to the completely opposite part of the country, up to the Pacific Northwest, Mr. Robbie Ray, he hasn't been terrible. You know, 4.15 ERA is okay. It's not great, but you're coming off a year where Ray, had one of the best years of his career, huge bounce back with Toronto, 32 starts, 2.84 ERA, 1.04 whip, and 248 strikeouts in 193 and a third innings. But this year, the walk rate has kind of ticked back up 3% up to 9.6. K rate has absolutely plummeted to the worst rate we've ever seen from him. A lot of blue on that Savant page, Chris. So are you willing to, it's the same question here, are you willing to buy Ray right now in redraft or Dynasty, or are you concerned with this start?
I mean, I just think this is really who he is. He had a great year last year. It's not, he's going to strike more hitters out. I mean, the strikeout rate at 20.8% is a little, you know, catch you off guard from a Robbie Ray type pitcher, but the walk rate's back up and it's still down. You know, 9.6% is good, but it's up from 6.7% last year, which, you know, was interesting after he walked 17.9% of hitters in 2020. So he's always been a north of 10% walk rate type guy. I think Ray's going to hover around a 4 ERA, honestly. You know, he may end up 3.8, 3.9. Strikeouts are going to come, but this is really just who he is, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that the strikeout rate has plummeted so bad, though. Even bad Robbie Ray was still striking out a ton of guys.
Right.
Like, he's always had that K rate to fall back on. But this year, the whiff rate is down about 6%. The chase rate's down about 7.5%. He's only gotten whiffs on the fastball and slider, which are his predominant two pitches. He's basically almost ditched everything else this year. And last year he was about 90% four seam slider. Now he's about 96.5%. Only throwing the curveball 12 times and the changeup 4 times for a combined 3.6% usage. And, you know, those, he hasn't gotten a whiff yet on those. Sliders down from a 45.5 to a 35.5 whiff rate, so down 10%. Four seamer down about 3%. So I do think that he will get back up in the K rate department. But yeah, if you bought into what he showed last year, I'm sorry, because that was an illusion. You know, hindsight's 2020, I know, but there was a lot of red flags where I'm like, all right, I don't believe he sticks at this. And we said this, you know, in preseason and offseason episodes where, all right, maybe he's made some adjustments. He'll be better than what he was, but definitely not 2021 good. So if you can still cash out for, you know, near peak value from what he did last year, I probably would, because I think you're going to see, yeah, closer to a 4 ERA Robbie Ray, which his career ERA is 4 on the dot. But yeah, I'd be looking to still sell right now, but let him build up his, you know, maybe get a good few starts under his belt, let him build up that trade value again a little bit, and then I'd probably look to deal him for sure. All right, moving on to the next name on the list. This guy was he was almost a savior to a lot of fantasy teams last year down the stretch, where he was, I think, like a top 10, top 15 arm in baseball for the last 2-3 months of the season. But this year, not so much. And that is Mr. Ranger Suarez of the Philadelphia Phillies. So far this year, through 5 starts, 4.63 ERA, 1.63 whip, and he's just not striking out anybody at all. Last year, he had the 25.6% K rate. This year, 14%. It's still early, obviously, but I wonder how much of last year was even legit. Like, he's a guy that I wasn't buying into, that I kind of like bought in a little bit. I started looking at some of the metrics. I'm like, all right, maybe he can be like a top 50, top 60 type of arm. But now he's fallen, so he's barely inside my top 100 overall in my starting pitcher rankings. I don't know. He just doesn't miss many bats. And if he's not getting the low ratios, I don't really see a reason to, you know, roster. You know, he's still rosterable for now, but in redraft leagues, he might be a cut pretty soon. That sinker is being left over the heart of the plate way too often. I don't know. I don't see a lot of appeal here, but I don't know. Do you see anything here that is promising to you that he could turn this around?
No, I mean, the interesting thing was, like, it'd be easy to call out and say, well, the strikeout rate's lower, and his strikeout rate last year was due to him being a reliever for some of the time. But his splits last year were pretty good as a starter and reliever. Yeah. He had a 26.6% K rate as a reliever, but 25% as a starter. His walk rate actually went down as a starter. There was just a lot of good luck, I think. He had a super high strand rate last year, which obviously was going to see some regression. No questions asked about that. But even still, like, you look past the 1.36 ERA, and he still had a 3.51 Sierra and a 2.72 FIP over 106 innings, which is pretty dang good.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The strikeouts just being gone is an interesting development for sure. I'm kind of at a loss as to what's happened. I'm like you. I didn't draft him anywhere. Like, he was pretty much in a void for me. And it was interesting also, like, you know, early draft season, his price was like near a top 100 guy, and it slowly kind of plummeted throughout draft season. But I'll be just curious to watch and see, like, you know, what happens the rest of the way. I mean, he is throwing the sinker a little more, and obviously sinker, you know, more of a pitch to contact type pitch, but he just has a 12% whiff rate on it. He's not getting whiffs on the changeup either, like he was last year. That's down 8.5%. His slider in particular, he doesn't throw it that often, but it's not missing bats either. So a lot of red flags here. I'm not sure what kind of a range we're talking. Like, if he's dropping, his whip is killer right now, 1.63. The 4.63 ERA through five starts is, it's okay, but he's not really doing much for you right now. I think in a 12-team league, you could find another option on the wire, but yeah. I don't really like the popular thing. I think you just see where he goes over the next couple starts and then kind of make that call.
Yeah, I just don't see any. I'm trying to find some sort of silver lining here. No, the whiff rate's way down, below average chase rate, zone contact 86.5%, chase contact 70.9%. Both are well above league average marks. Which pitch was it? The four-seamer, which he only uses 13.6% of the time, but he's allowed a 600 batting average against, 900 slug, 668 wOBA. It's just ridiculous. So, yeah, maybe he can cling to back-end top 100 value and, you know, maybe be one of the back guys on your rotation. But, I don't know. Yeah, you can definitely do better. Who would you rather have rest of the season, him or Kyle Hendricks?
Hendricks has been awful. So,
yeah.
Probably...
Range. Is he answering neither?
Just don't take either of them. Drop them and run.
Right. Yeah. No, for sure. All right. Next name on the list is a guy that I was buying into a fair amount and really was hoping he was one of the guys that was going to get dealt out of Cincinnati this year. That did not happen. And this year he is not been good, to understatement. Tyler Molly right now has a 7.01 ERA through six starts and a 1.71 whip. Right around a K per inning, but overall the K rate is down 6%, walk rate up a little over 3%. And this is not even a home road thing anymore. He actually has a better ERA at home, and his ERA at home this year is, I think, right around the same range as it was last year. It's a tick under 6 at home, but his ERA on the road has gone from below 2 to above 8 now. So I don't know. It's hard to value Tyler Molly because you've seen the potential, like how dominant he was out of Cincinnati last year. And I don't believe that was entirely a fluke, but this year he has not looked good. So is he a guy that you're pretty worried about or a good buy low in your opinion?
Well, it's confusing because he has a 3.19 FIP. 3.19.
Yeah, he's been a bit unlucky.
Compared to a 7.01 ERA, and his xERA is pretty good as well at 3.7. I'm intrigued. I'm not sure where the strikeouts have gone. I'm not sure how his FIP is so sparingly different than the ERA, But is that just going to be the case all year because he's got a crappy defense behind him? Like, that's a real possibility here, that the defense just isn't good in Cincinnati and he's just getting shafted because of that.
That definitely could be. But hey, at least they don't have Eugenio Suarez playing shortstop every single right. day now. That's, I guess, an upgrade. It's better than it was.
Kyle Farmer made an awful play yesterday. I was watching. It was-
it's not like Kyle Farmer's some Gold Glove defender either. So, yeah, that defense as a whole is still pretty bad. It's not a great ballpark to pitch half your games in either. So, I don't know. I think I'm still leaning towards the buy low side on him, but I think we got to temper expectations a little bit because he's now six seasons into his career. He's been an even 100 starts, 515 innings pitched. He's got a 4.47 ERA and a 1.36 WHIP. So I think he could be like a solid, like top 60, top 70 arm, but a lot of rankings preseason, myself included, had him, you know, low to mid 30s as like a high end SP3 for 15 teamers or low end SP3 for 12 teamers. I just don't think he's the type of guy. Maybe if he gets out of Cincinnati, maybe he can get back to that level or at least close to it. But yeah, I think we just have to adjust our expectations with Tyler Molly. But I think he still is a, you know, a decent buy low right now. I'll be running up there to get him, but yeah, maybe it's worth kicking the tires. Let's say that. All right, that's it for pitchers. Over to the hitting side of thing. Let's go over to out to the West Coast here with Mr. Max Muncy, who's a guy that I'm definitely buying low on. So far, look at the surface stats, 87 plate appearances, 130, 310, 261 slash line, two home runs in those 87 plate appearances, but barrel rate is still very good. Hard hit rate down a little bit, but still good. The approach is great. So this is definitely a buy low for me. How about you, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, he's hitting the ball hard still. The elbow seems to be fine. I think he's a great pilo. I mean, everything in the profile still looks good to me. I think there's definitely just been some bad luck here, and we're going to see this, you know, a comeback pretty strong. I mean, obviously in an OBP league, like Muncy's been a strong play despite everything else. He's still getting on base to high clip. That batting average is going to come up. He has a 310 OBP despite a 130 batting average. No doubt in my mind, we see this tick up pretty significantly. He has a 140 BABIP right now. If you remember, this time last year, like Freddie Freeman was going through the same thing and his BABIP was just crazy low and Freeman still ended up hitting 300. Muncy's not going to hit 300 because he's not a 300 hitter. He's going to hit near 250. He's going to provide 30 home runs. In my opinion, he's easy buy low. The zone contact is a career best right now, by far. Not even close. I mean, 91.5% zone contact rate. His next best over a full season would be 86% last year, which was up from, you know, the previous year. So he's been steadily improving there. I think we see he'll be all right. I'm not concerned about Muncy.
Yeah, and I was looking at his plate discipline metrics in general, just steadily improving every single year. Whiff rate continues to go down. Same with the chase rate, zone, all the contact rates kind of sneak up every year. So yeah, definitely buying low on Max Muncy. No doubt about that. He's gonna get better. Loaded lineup. He's going to be a big part of that. So, and look at him. He's a very consistent guy over the years as well. You look at the last three full seasons he's had, 2018, 2019, and 2021, 35, 35, 36 home runs, OBP, 391, 374, 368. So, obviously, better OBP guy than average. So, yeah, 100% looking to buy low on Muncy. But maybe not this next guy, Joey Votto. Has been terrible. He's walking a lot, but that's about it. Chris, I'll toss it over to you. Do you see any reason to buy low on Votto? Because I really don't.
I'm afraid that he may be done. It doesn't help that his team is just awful. So, like, you know, you obviously want to go out on a positive note, but gosh, the Reds team is so bad right now. Like, what's his incentive? Like, other than he's trying to wrap up a potential Hall of Fame type career. And you're right, he's been pretty bad. I mean, his slug of 135 is just barely ahead of his 122 batting average. It's been pretty atrocious across the board. You know, we did see, even though Votto had a really strong year last year statistically, we saw a decline in his plate discipline skills. He chased significantly more last year. His contact rates dropped pretty significantly, and we're seeing another drop this year, which, you know, could signify that the end is near for Joey Votto.
Yeah, no, yeah, those metrics turning the wrong way. Chase rate's gone up now 2 straight years. Same with the whiff rate, which is up to a career high 32%. Yeah, K rate keeps going up. Walk rate's going down. Obviously, it's still 13.3% walk rate, which is still good. But the K rate's up to 32.2%, which is easily a career high by almost 10%. Last year, it was 23.8%, which was his career high until this year. Obviously, it's still early. But yeah, one double. That's it. For extra base hits, one double. No home runs. Nothing else. 3 RBI, 4 runs in 90 plate appearances. So he's a drop in redraft league. Especially you can get some better, you know, corner infield options out there. Some guys are pretty hot, like a Rowdy Tellez or Jesus Aguilar. You know, there's plenty of guys out there that I'd rather have right now than Joey Votto. And Dynasty, just nothing left there. Like, if you were a contender and he was doing well, he'd be a good trade option. But he's not doing well. He's 38. Yeah, I think it's the end of the road for Mr. Joey Votto, unfortunately. But, you know, we've said this before and he came back. I don't know. I won't put it past him to say, you know, screw you all here. And I'm going to go on a tear here in the next 5 months. Probably not, but we'll see. Next hitter on the list here. Who we got? Let's go over to my Boston Red Sox. Unfortunately, our 6-year, 150 something million dollar player, not living up to expectations so far. Trevor Story is obviously who I'm talking about, who so far has given us 0 home runs, 1 steal, 6 RBI, 8 runs scored, and a 205, 298, 274 slug, and a lot of blue on that Savant page. He has a good max exit velo, which is whatever. It's not a good indicator to use anyway. Hard hit rate is down. K rate's up. I don't know. I'm hoping it's just him settling into the, you know, dealing with the pressure of a big contract and dealing with Boston. Obviously, going from Colorado to Boston in terms of it's the pressure, the media. Boston media can be, I'll put it nicely, they can be feisty. They can be ferocious. It's not an easy place to play. Nobody gives a crap out in Colorado. They give a crap here in Boston. They've chewed up much better players than Trevor Story for not performing well. So I'm kind of counting it to that and hoping that he can get it going here once he gets settled in a little bit more, but it has not been a good start, Chris.
No, but he's picking it up. He had 2 doubles tonight, 3 RBI.
Yeah.
You look at his, you know, trend of batted balls, and he's certainly trending upwards when you look at the amount of balls he's hit over 100 miles an hour recently. Like, over the last week, that number has jumped pretty significantly. You look, and over the it took him 8 days to have his first batted ball event over 100 miles an hour. And so since then, we're seeing a huge uptick. And over the last week specifically, he's been hitting the ball much harder, which has been good to see. The results haven't quite been there. But even tonight, you look, and the dead ball is just something that's affecting him. I mean, he hit a ball, you know, 102 miles an hour tonight at a 32-degree launch angle. It traveled 387 feet. Like, he got a double out of it, but you think last year that's probably a home run. And someone with, like, Story's power, I think, is getting affected by this. We're seeing this with a lot of people, but he is hitting the ball harder, and that's what you need to know. I think he's kind of coming into his own. There's a lot of pressure, as you mentioned. Players often struggle in the first year of big contracts as well. Also, an adjustment moving from Colorado. That's a factor, too, is like the way pitches move in Colorado is significantly different than everywhere else. When you've played there as long as you have, really understanding and seeing pitches differently is probably an adjustment. I mean, not making excuses for Story, but I do think that he's really coming into his own here. You know, what do we expect long term? I don't know. I mean, I think he's probably a 260, 270 hitter, but I do think there's still 20 home run pop and 20 stolen bases in that bat.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's just a lot of adjustment versus for the new market, the contract, like you said, the way pitches move differently outside of Colorado compared to inside Colorado. It's just a lot of adjustment, and that's hard for any player to make, no matter how good you are. So, yeah, I would definitely buy low on Trevor Story. I think he still go 2020 this year. I still think there's a chance he does that, though he's going to pick it up sometime here. And like you said, he's had a couple doubles today. hopefully that is the start of something more. Moving over to a guy that did go 20-20 last year, but is off to a atrocious start this year, a guy I'm regretting drafting in the Highlander Dynasty Invitational, and that is Mr. Randy Arozarena, 2020 postseason hero for the Tampa Bay Rays. Off to a 213, 253, 330 start. Still waiting for that first home run. Nice. Zero home runs. Does have four steals, though, which is nice. So has that really good sprint speed. And the max exit velo is there. Hard hit rate and average exit velo are okay, solid, but only one barrel so far. I don't know. Is that 2020 guy still a viable outcome for him moving forward year after year? Or is it possible, Chris, that we've already seen the peak Randy Arozarena dynasty value?
Possibly. I mean, you know, when you hit the ball on the ground 64.1% of the time, it just ain't happening. So, you know, Arozarena always has struggled with contact, you know, overall contact rates, and that's actually up this year in a small sample, despite him chasing a little bit more on pitches out of the zone. Really, I think the biggest hindrance in his profile has just been hitting the ball on the ground too much. He's never been a StatCast darling, never really hit the ball that hard. He's always been a product of high BABIPs. And this year, you can't blame his BABIP. His BABIP's right at league average at 297. So there's no real excuses there. He's not walking. He's showing who he is from a strikeout rate standpoint over the last 3 years, at least at the major league level. It was 28.9%, 28.1%, 28.4% this year. So he seems to hover right around this mark. But you're right. I'm a little bit afraid that his dynasty value has peaked.
Yeah, the hard hit rate is still the same as it has been, but just hitting more balls on the ground, not walking as much as you mentioned, like I said, one barrel. I think he could still be like 15 home runs, 20 steals, but I don't think the average is going to be more than 250, 260 or so. So that's still decent, but it was at one point where we were talking about him as a top 50 dynasty guy, and yeah, I do not think that is ever coming back. So would I buy low on him right now? I don't know. I guess if the price was like pretty low, I'd consider it. So I think obviously he's better than this, but I don't know. I'm not rushing out there to go out and get him in redraft or dynasty. But if you're listening and you are in the Highlander Dynasty Invitational, he's great. Take him from me for a good, give me something good for him. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm not. But all right, then two more outfielders on the list here. This next guy is someone I am 110% buying low on. That's Tyler O'Neill. So far, slash line 202, 276, 333. Two home runs, three steals, and 98 player appearances. Did hit a home run today, which was nice to see. The reason why I'm buying low, you know, we know the power. Like, we've seen this guy. He's one of the most jacked human beings you'll ever see. Raw power right up there with, right up near Stanton and Judge, maybe not quite there, but not too far off. Like, we know the power is there, and he's shown the sprint speed is still there. That power speed, that's not going away. But what is the reason why I want to buy low right now is that a lot of his like plate approach metrics have improved this year, believe it or not. He's dropped the K rate around 6.5% on the 24.7%. Walk rate has gone up from 7.1 to 9.7%. He's whiffing less. He's chasing less. The chase contact rate is actually up. First pitch swing is down 8%. So he's being more patient. So those are all things that are very, very encouraging. Will they stick? I don't know, but certainly encouraging. The power will get there. The speed's still there. So yeah, 100% buy low on Tyler O'Neill. Are you there with me, Chris?
Yeah, and he's one where the low BABIP actually signifies something. Now, O'Neill consistently runs high BABIPs because high line drive rate, quick sprint speed, and the ability to hit the ball hard. And he's still doing all that, but he's got a 233 BABIP this year. So that easily comes up. Obviously, home runs kind of come with it. Not much has changed. You know, he's still the line drive rate's down a hair. You know, 1.5% is not that noticeable. His home run to fly ball rate of 4.3% is not who Tyler O'Neill is. So you mentioned the contact metrics improving. Like, that's been a huge ordeal for him. He'll be fine. I'm genuinely not concerned about him.
Yeah, neither am I. This next guy, I am, though, and that's Framel Reyes. He'll run the show with the big guy from Cleveland. So far this year, two home runs and 87 plate appearances, 157, 195, 229 slash line here. Chris, are you seeing anything that makes you want to buy low on him right now?
Not in particular, but I did pick him up in Tout Wars last week after he was dropped. And, you know, I was like, he'll be fine. But now I'm kind of wondering. I don't know. He's still hitting the ball hard.
Worth a shot, you know.
Yeah. I mean,
who'd you drop for him?
Nobody significant. I don't even remember. So it wasn't.
Yeah. See, it's worth to see if he can bounce back for sure.
Yeah. So the K rate, definitely concerning. The walk rate, concerning. Still hitting the ball hard. Ah, man, I don't know. It's just definitely been a rough go. Maybe we see it come back to life. But right now, there's not much giving me hope other than the fact that we've seen him do it before. Like, that's why I picked him up, because, like, we know what he's capable of. And I think that he's capable of being a 250 hitter with 30-plus home runs. And, you know, I find some value in that. But right now, not looking so pretty.
Yeah, not with a 46.3% strikeout rate and a 3.7% walk rate. Yeah, like the quality of contact metrics is still pretty solid. His exit velo is in the top 10% of baseball. BR rate's 12.2%. Hard hit rate 43.9. You know, those last two are down a bit from last year, but you know, still obviously above average metrics. But that K rate just skyrocketing. Obviously, the whiff rate up to 41.8%. He's still handling fast, you know, only a 28% whiff rate on fastballs, but 65% whiff rate on breaking balls, 43% whiff rate on off speed. He doesn't have any hits of off speed pitches so far this year. And they're just throwing him nothing but breaking balls and off speed right now. That's up to a 47% combined usage against him. So they know he's having a hard time against those pitches and they're attacking him with it. I still think there's I don't know. That K rate is so alarming right now. I keep looking at that 46.3% K rate, and it just sticks out like a sore thumb. But the fact that he's still hitting the ball hard, maybe he's only 230 this year, but I still think he gets the 30 home runs. I don't think he's one of those guys that's going to be hurt too much by the new ball, which could be different next week. Who knows? But he's obviously got that big raw power, always has a high barrel rate, high exit velo, stuff like that. So not too worried. I am worried about the approach stuff, but I think he'll bounce back. 230 home runs, if that's what you need, fine. Is he much different than Miguel Sano or a healthy Miguel Sano moving forward? Probably not. Higher upside, obviously, but yeah. So buy low, sure, but again, not a guy that I'm looking to run out there and get. Like you said, you got him in Tout Wars. If he's dropped in your league, definitely worth a shot. 12 teamers, maybe not in tens, but 12, 14, or deeper, absolutely, just to see if he can turn it around, what he's shown, you know, over the last couple of years, especially in that power department. I would still buy low on Franmil Reyes for sure. Not as much as Tyler O'Neill. Tyler O'Neill, I think, is the biggest buy low hitter for me on this list. But that is going to wrap us up here. Thank you to everyone for tuning in this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. You can follow us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. And our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. And check out all of our written work at Fantrax HQ, Fantasy Pros, or over on our Patreon. And join us again next time for more fantasy baseball talk. But until then, everyone take care.
Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry, because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead, making sure that fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this. Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.